welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, unceded Coast Salish Territories, Canada. And we are on our new station, that's 100.5. So if you're tuning in looking for the peak, they've moved to 102.7 FM. We've changed stations with them. But do stay with us on this station. You'll hear some different radio programming than you probably heard in any other radio station in Vancouver. So today is Friday, September 21st, 2012. I'm your host, Alan Cohen. I'm joined here today by my co-host, Alyssa.
Hi.
Also, Allison.
Hi there.
And also our tech trainee, Tim.
Move my mic.
So great. Animal Voices is at Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio programming, bringing you the animal and vegan related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's going on both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage a movement toward a world in which all animals, both human and non-human, are treated with compassion and care. We strive to expose all the complicated relationships we share with all the critters of this planet and wish that all animals be able to flourish to their full potential. This programming can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we also stream live at cooperadio.org. And for those of you who are also interested, you can definitely get our podcasts at animalvoices.org after airing on our website. So on today's show, we'll be talking with Peter Young. For those of you who don't know, Peter Daniel Young is an American animal rights activist. He was indicted by a federal grand jury in 1998 on charges related to fur farm raids in Iowa, South Dakota, and Wisconsin in 1997. He was in hiding for seven years before being arrested in San Jose and sentenced to 2 years imprisonment in 2005. Young was eventually released in February 2007. He continues to be engaged in the animal rights movement, and he's done numerous speaking engagements. He's been a featured speaker at animal rights conferences held in the United States and has spoken at animal rights conferences also in Europe. Currently, he serves as an advisor for the North American Animal Liberation Press Office. And for those of you who don't know the Animal Liberation Front, they're quite a ubiquitous name. The ALF is an international underground leaderless resistance that engages in illegal direct action in pursuit of animal liberation. The activists in the ALF, that's the Animal Liberation Front, see themselves as modern-day underground railroad activists, removing animals from laboratories and farms, destroying facilities, arranging safe houses and veterinary care, and operating sanctuaries where the animals live out the rest of their lives. Many critics, of course, have compared them to terrorists, and many of the charges that ALF individuals and activists do get is actually terrorist charges. So you're listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show and here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, and
I just wanted to mention, too, regarding Peter Young, he's been on the show before, too. In December 2009, he gave an excellent interview, so check that out. Just go to our website, animalvoices.org, and put in his name, and you'll find that interview there.
Great, thanks. So we can jump right to it with Alyssa and Allison.
Well, it is your last show today, and I actually had a tear come to my eye this morning thinking how much you've brought to the show. And
you're very emotional.
Well, I am. I'm super sensitive today.
I was too busy trying to scramble to get ready to think about it.
Well, I thought about it all morning. And I wanted to say thank you for what you brought, and I think that you've brought an excellent intersectional analysis and so much more depth to the show, and I think what you have brought to the show will echo long beyond the time that you're gone. You've
Via our website
left some amazing shows with us that I know that I've listened to and taken notes about, and I've learned a lot, and I think our listeners have as well. Some of the shows you've done, those queer animals, queer liberation and fat positive veganism, anarchism, animals and transcending the human non-human binary, locavorism, permaculture, and thinking about the global and local. Those are just some of the highlights of the shows you've done. I wonder, can you tell us some of your favorite moments of being involved with the show and some of your more memorable interviews moments?
Oh, thanks, Alyssa. Well, some of my most favorite moments are probably even the pollocks we sometimes hold before or after the shows, which are always fantastic.
We've had one. I'm the one who cooks for all the other ones. Thanks.
Definitely. Yeah, well, that's what I mean. The food that's brought in has been great.
That's your highlight? That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. I super enjoy the food.
I came for the food.
I really enjoyed my earlier shows with On Anarchism that I did with a really great anarchist professor that's online. Also, some of the shows we did on queer animal rights and veganism, I really enjoyed those shows. But really, just doing the shows with you folks, yeah, it's been super great and informative and really developmental for me and my animal rights philosophy and my veganism.
That's a great way to put it. And speaking of being developmental for your animal rights philosophy, we do need someone to replace you. So if anyone else wants to develop their animal rights activism and philosophy and knowledge in that, please contact us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
Yeah, definitely no experience necessary. None of us had really done much of this before.
Yeah, I mean, everyone comes with life experience, yeah. So that's something. I mean, everyone has experience. It's not, you can apply the skills that you've used in the past and that you use in your daily life to this show. If you have speaking skills, if you're a great intellectual like Elon is and wants, and your degree's in philosophy, is that correct?
And political science.
Oh, political science? Yeah. Okay, there you go. So, I mean, I think you've brought some of those skills definitely to the table. As Alyssa, I'm not even sure what your educational background is, but you certainly bring skills in knowledge and research to the show, and I really appreciate that. We all have different things to bring to the show. We are animal voices, voices for the animals, which means plural. We're three separate voices here that each have something to bring. So that's what I really like about this show, is having a collective where each person who is responsible for producing segments on the show is able to bring something different of their own, just their own, just, you know, their own personality is able to come in.
Great. Thanks so much. Well, I guess we can jump right
we'll
in
miss
with
you.
The thanks. I'll miss you guys too. So with that in mind, we can jump right into the events with Allison.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I wanted to talk about our end of summer potluck that we had last week, which Alyssa was at. And Tim, you showed up right at the end. I think I saw you in the dark there. anyways, it was an end of summer potluck that we had. We had one last year too. And this one was, if you were listening to the show last week, you had to cancel it the week before due to rain. The one day that it rained, but I think that was all meant to be, because it happened to turn out to be a wonderful end of summer evening last Sunday, where we had about 50 people come out for a joint Animal Voices and Raw BC end of summer event. It was a wonderful celebration. The highlight of it for me was that I actually got to meet a lot of people and got to talk to a lot of people about the show. So if anyone's listening today who was there, hello from Allison. And Alyssa, I'm sure you talked to people as well.
Sure.
Yeah. What'd you think of the whole thing?
I thought it was great. It was, yeah, it was.
Couldn't have been a better night.
Beautiful location, awesome weather, and a pretty great turnout, and lots of tasty food. And I think those events are really important for networking and community building and just really celebrating what we do.
Yeah, so thank you to everyone who came out for that. And if you want to attend more events like that, we actually do have another potluck coming up. So I'm going to talk about that now. We had our first annual Compassionate Thanksgiving community potluck event last Thanksgiving, and for the Canadians listening out there, Thanksgiving is coming up once again pretty soon, so we will be celebrating our second annual Compassionate Vegan Thanksgiving this year with Animal Voices and all of our supporters and basically just anyone who wants to come. I think it's going to be great fun. We are in the process of planning it now, and this is an event where we can once again just, you know, build community and share delicious nourishment food with like-minded people. Everyone is welcome to attend, so I just want to stress that. The date for this event is on Monday, October the 8th, so that's Thanksgiving Monday. So if you do have plans on the Thanksgiving Sunday, well, mark your calendar now for Thanksgiving Monday for a wonderful event that's sure to bring out a lot of people. Last year, we actually had 140 people turn up, which was very unexpected. So, yeah, so this is why we pre-sold tickets last year, because we didn't really know. I wanted to make sure, like, oh, you know, we had room for about 100. Oops, a lot more people came. So, but that was great. We fit them all in, right? And I think people really enjoyed it. So this year we've actually rented a much larger venue. The venue is a St. James Community Square, which is, it's the St. James Hall in the St. James Community Square. The address is 3214 West 10th Avenue in Vancouver, which is between Blenheim and Trutch. So that's just one block from the Broadway bus route. And if you're driving, there's free parking behind the building, beside the building, as well as on the street in front. So this is an animal-friendly event, of course, for Animal Voices. So we ask that everyone who attends, please bring a vegan dish to share. And if you're listening to the show, you know that that means a dish that is free of all animal products, including dairy, eggs, honey, gelatin, whey, and casein. So a dish to share that serves about 8 people, plus your own plate and cup and cutlery for yourself, and make sure to bring a serving utensil for your dish. And we understand that some people aren't cooks, or you might be pressed for time. That's okay. Store-bought food is perfectly acceptable, as well as is bringing a beverage. That's what some people did last year, which was really, really appreciated, because we need drinks there too. So, and then we also ask that you bring an ingredients list, which is helpful for people who've got allergies or certain food sensitivities, and we'll have pieces of paper there too, just in case you forget it.
And what kind of beverages can people bring?
Well, I even wrote down examples. Juice, non-dairy milk, coconut water. Just don't bring alcohol, because we don't have a license for that. So yeah, anything. Anything else you can think of. Tea, coffee, maybe? We'll see. We'll see if we can get that sorted out. It is a family-friendly event, so please bring your family, bring your loved ones, bring your friends. It's going to be great fun. This year, we also are hosting a variety show during the dinner, which will be showcasing the entertaining talents of our guests. So if you sing or play an instrument, Alyssa, or myself, I should say, all right, if you tell jokes, if you perform magic tricks, and you would like to perform at the show, please pre-register your act by emailing us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We have a very lovely stage at this venue, and I don't want it to go to waste. And there's actually even a grand piano there. So if you play piano, let us know, and we can book that piano for you. Once again, we'll be having a raffle fundraiser at the event, and all the proceeds for that fundraiser will be going to Animal Voices. Once again, we are a nonprofit organization with charitable status, part of Vancouver Cooperative Radio at 100.5 FM, and we do need money to keep this show on the air. So this is part of the reason why we're holding this event, but I'd say it's not even, you know, it's a part of the reason. A main part is the community building. I think there's a real need to have such a holiday event for people who want to celebrate a Thanksgiving without any dead animals at it. And I think people really appreciated that last year. Tickets are $5 at the door. Once again, this is a fundraiser, so we ask that that people give us $5 at the door to go towards Animal Voices. That worked out really well last year. And I just wanted to mention, too, that the venue is also co-sponsored by Vancouver Meatless Meetup. You can find our event on meetup.com/meatlessmeetup, and also by Stop UBC Animal Research. And I also wanted to mention that the venue is wheelchair accessible, so when you get there, if you need the chairlift, just notify one of the event volunteers that you will need access to the chairlift. We also need volunteers. Do you want to talk about that, Alyssa?
We need volunteers. it's a big effort, and we need just some people to just sort of manage specific stations just that night. We're dealing with all the pre-organization, but we need people to show up there a bit early and stay a little bit later and just help out with making sure the event runs smoothly. So, if you want to help out with that, we super appreciate it. And you can email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com.
Hello, Vancouver, and thank you for tuning in. This is the East Side Story, and your co-host is Louise Wachu. This is the show that you tune in to listen to your concerns addressed, your politics refreshed, and your culture re-inspired. Protect my people, Jah. No let them get caught in the crossfire. Protect my nation, Jah. Thank you for your support. This is Louise Uwachu, co-hosting on East Side Story, Mondays from 4 to 5 p.m. Vancouver time. Thank you, Vancouver.
You're listening to 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver on unceded Coast Salish Territories, Canada. This is a few news events for you. Windsor, Ontario City Council was put on notice that the lethal solution it approved Monday night to deal with quote-unquote nuisance skunks would be illegal. The new program voted on unanimously on Monday would permit residents to call in area trappers to deal with unwanted urban skunks and then have part of the cost for each call reimbursed by the city to the homeowner. Michael Nelson, a Chatham-based management biologist with the Ministry of Natural Resources, told council that provincial legislation is very clear and that only specific skunks reasonably believed to be damaging or about to damage property can be captured, killed, or harassed. Further, provincial laws state that financial incentives, such as paying for skunk trapping, are forbidden for a municipality. By law, trap skunks can only be relocated 1 kilometer away from where they're caught. If the Ministry of Natural Resources wants to sue us, so be it, said Mayor Eddie Francis. Administration had recommended implementing a plan to educate Windsorites on things that could be done to make city less attractive to skunks, including recommendation for hard-sided containers for trash. Nelson said a big part of any solution is reducing food and sources of shelter for skunks, which he described as extremely adaptable to the urban environment. He agreed with Coulter that not addressing the underlying causes has little impact on the carrying capacity of an area to host skunks, and as long as there's food and shelter available for them, they'll keep coming back. So they're looking into the possibility of mandating that Windsorites use hard-sided containers, and the Humane Society agrees with that idea. Animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, sounded alarm bells in the spring when Windsor City Council first approved an $80,000 expenditure to implement the skunk control program. Windsor City Councilor said he received more than 1,000 angry emails from around the world, but he said most Windsorites he heard from contacted him to complain about city's skunks. I noticed also Snowflake Furs in Vancouver is closed, and supposedly that's been since the August 23rd incident in which a very smelly substance was squirted through the door jams. The Animal Liberation Front spokespeople said that they stand behind the action, and I just noticed that it was completely empty the other day, and I have to say that I smiled a little bit about that.
So they've been closed since the incident?
I don't have guarantees about that, but I know that was the date of the incident, and it is
totally closed. I thought they were supposed to be closed years ago, and then...
It's not necessarily closed, it's just empty, and they say they're revamping or something.
Well, that's fantastic.
Something
news
to look into for next week.
Definitely. I think that's pretty much about all I have time for. I just wanted to mention a Southeast Nebraska man got some jail time up to 2 years after he left his hundreds of pigs to just starve.
Disgusting.
In his yard. He said he just got lazy and he was deemed to be
Did he get a lowered sentence because
stable.
He admitted being to laziness?
I don't,
his cruelty?
I don't think so. I think it was the harshest sentence ever
right,
for something like this. So,
How many pigs?
It was about 1,000.
So if you divide...
They had to bulldoze and burn the whole barn.
If you divide 2 years into 1,000, what is that, about 2 minutes per pig or something?
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks. Yeah. Just wanted to mention a few more events really quickly that are coming up. This event is happening tomorrow on Saturday, September the 22nd at 12:30 p.m. The local organization Stop UBC Animal Research will be having a demonstration at the University of British Columbia tomorrow at the Pharmaceutical Sciences building, which is at 2405 Westbrook Mall at UBC. So UBC will be holding an open house tomorrow at its new pharmaceutical science building. And as I said, Stop UBC Animal Research will be there to greet many alumni and students and community members who will be coming to tour the building and take part in opening events. There is a large portion of the building where research on animals will be taking place. So Stop UBC Animal Research welcomes anyone who wants to come out and help with that demo. And for more information, you can contact Anne at 604-787-7315. And on this Sunday, September the 23rd, there is yet another vegan bake sale happening in town. This one is to benefit the local animal rights organization Liberation BC. It's happening from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Nice Shoes Vegan Shoe Store at 3568 Fraser Street in Vancouver. And they ask that you come and show your support for this all-volunteer-run local grassroots animal rights organization. And if you've if you listen to the show, you know we've had members and directors from Liberation BC on the show before speaking about their various events. One of the events that they'll be organizing is next week, the annual Walk for Farm Animals. So there's a tie-in that's happening next Saturday, September the 29th, and you can go on their website, liberationbc.org, to find out about all the other good work that they do. They're also going to be organizing the animal advocacy camp coming up next month. There's a meeting about it next week, but I don't really have time to talk about it. So yeah, just go onto their website if you want to find out more, and if you want to go to the bake sale, once again, it's September the 23rd from 3 to 5 p.m. If you have any events that you would like to have advertised in the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thanks, Allison. So today with us, we have Peter Young. Peter Young is an animal rights activist who was indicted in 1997 for sabotaging a number of fur farms in Iowa, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And he's also the advisor and I guess one could say the spokesman for the North American Animal Liberation Front, their press office. So we have with us Peter, and we'll be chatting with him right now.
In 1998, it seems that you were indicted by a grand jury on charges related to fur farm raids. Can you tell us a bit about these raids and the animals you liberated?
Sure. I was charged with the release of mink and foxes from 6 fur farms in the United States. And that campaign was kind of the product of me and some people in Seattle getting really frustrated with our activism. We protested outside of laboratories. We were doing everything we were supposed to do as activists, but unfortunately just wasn't really achieving the results that we wanted. So we were learning about this new kind of emerging trend in ALF tactics where people were actually going into fur farms and liberating mink directly from their cages right into the wild. And this was very appealing to us because it eliminated one of the biggest hurdles in ALF tactics and rescues, which is to find homes for animals. In the past, you know, if you wanted to rescue animals, you would, you know, say go into a lab and take out, you know, rabbits or mice or what have you, and you would then be faced with the burden of having to home, potentially hundreds of animals. And so with fur farm liberations, people were realizing that mink are native to North America, these animals can survive in the wild, so people were going into these farms, opening the cages and releasing the animals directly into the wild. So we decided this was something we wanted to do. We felt it offered kind of the best bang for your buck equation. You know, we at one point timed ourselves. I remember there was two of us, and we realized we could release 1,000 animals every 15 minutes, which is much more efficient than anything we had done before. So myself and my future co-defendant left Seattle and drove eastward across the U.S., visiting ultimately 6 fur farms and releasing between 8 and 12,000 mink and about 100 foxes.
Did you do these raids as part of the ALF, or did you just take ALF tactics and then use them as, you know, your own kind of identificational marker?
You know, ALF is such a nebulous thing. I mean, really, the only distinction between the actions we carry out and a classifiable ALF action is simply just that we did not claim our actions as ALF actions. I mean, they fit the model of the ALF. They were within the code of the ALF. We just chose not to issue communiques. Primarily at the time, our motivation was that we did not want to put all the fur farmers in the country on high alert by stimulating a lot of media attention. So we chose to not issue communiques. So in point of fact, these actions were not claimed by the ALF, no.
So can you actually tell us who the ALF, the Animal Liberation Front, is, and what exactly you do for them now?
The ALF is, like I said, it's a nebulous movement, you could say, of people all over the world who are out every night working outside the law to rescue animals. And that can be achieved in a number of different ways. But I think the thread that runs through everybody who carries out an ALF action is that they realize that a lot of victories for animals are not going to be achieved by working with inside the law. The fact is there are very few laws to protect animals. There are a lot of laws to protect their abusers. So people will, if they go into a laboratory overnight and rescue animals, give them homes, people will burn down slaughterhouses. People will, go to a game breeder and release pheasants into the wild, and any sort of action, usually in the dead of night, to save animals. Insofar as it adheres to the ALF code can be claimed as an ALF action. So there are people out every night, and it tends to be an average of about one action in the world, just about every night. And the ALF's history goes back into the 70s in the UK, where the ALF traditionally or historically has been the most active.
So you said a bit earlier that, of course, the raids and the action that you took weren't, the tactics, of course, was similar to ALF tactics, but you yourself didn't put out a communique. Do you find that actually identifying a certain action with the ALF actually becomes less strategic to the action given our current present state and how the ALF is viewed?
I think there are serious pros and cons. I think some of the pros are that the media is almost certain to pay attention as soon as you say ALF. And the word, you know, the name ALF is attached to any action. I think the media is bound to pay attention. There's a lot of debate about what role the media should have in ALF actions, and if, you know, a media component to an ALF action is even necessary or even helpful. I certainly come on the side of the media being very important to these actions, and I think they add an extra element of benefit to an action and can function as a form of outreach. So I think in most cases it is beneficial to claim an action as an ALF action. The downsides, of course, are that there are potential greater legal consequences if caught, because, you know, once you attach the ALF to something, it becomes sort of a easier for them to sell it to a jury as a terrorist action. Now, the flip side of that is that most people don't get caught. So there are definite pros and cons, and I think it just depends on the kind of action. I think it's very beneficial, especially for actions where the public is going to be largely in support of things like releasing mink from a fur farm or any sort of animal rescue where an animal is just directly liberated from an oppressive situation. I do think that the public, by and large, is in support of those kind of actions, and I think especially those type of actions are having the attention of the media can be very beneficial.
So obviously the raids that you undertook were illegal, given the trespassing, the property destruction that went underway. And of course, there's a huge divide in the animal rights community between folks in the animal rights movement who think that such tactics are productive and those who think they're counterproductive and focus rather on more long-term campaigns to maybe shut down mink farms in entirety. Can you tell us why you decided to actually take direct action as opposed to maybe doing a long-term campaign against these mink farmers?
Sure. I think it's kind of a false dichotomy, unfortunately, which is that you have to choose, I think, is the false belief. That somebody has to either, you know, go underground, quote-unquote, and be an ALF, you know, warrior, live working underground for animals, or being an above-ground campaigner. And the fact is you can do both. And when I was carrying out some small-scale actions in Seattle and then later on carrying out the mink liberations and so forth, I was also an above-ground activist participating in above-ground campaigns during the daytime. And what I learned was that ALF actions and ALF tactics provided a great supplement to my daytime work, so to speak. So they're not mutually exclusive, first of all. Second of all, I would challenge anybody to name me almost any legal campaign where ALF tactics would not achieve the results sought by the campaign much more quickly. And the fact is, although we don't really have the numbers right now, you know, obviously there's not nearly as many people willing to carry out ALF actions as there are people willing to, say, leaflet, you know, with vegan literature or what have you. But the fact is, you know, we wouldn't need to have any sort of above-ground campaigns against the fur industry, let's just say, if every single person that was against fur just paired off and went to a fur farm tonight and emptied the fur farm. You probably would not have a fur industry in this country in about 2 or 3 days. But overall, I think you have to kind of look at it on an industry-by-industry basis. And I think that you could make a good argument that the bigger the industry, the less effective ALF tactics are going to be. For example, I think an industry as huge and pervasive as the meat industry can absorb just about any blow the ALF could potentially deal to it because it's just so big. So I think when you look at it that way, I would say if someone had to choose between, let's say they had to choose, they were going to carry out an ALF action, they had to choose between the meat industry, the fur industry, the vivisection industry, or, you know, the veal industry or the foie gras industry or what have you, I would say the ALF tactics will be best applied to the smaller the industry, the bigger the impact that action is going to be. So, you know, I think at this stage where the numbers are very small, I do feel like ALF actions are best applied to smaller industries. You can make a good case that the meat industry is not the best target.
If everyone went out tonight, for instance, and did a raid on a fur farm, that, you know, these fur farms would not exist in 2 or 3 days, can you clarify how exactly the relationship between doing direct action would lead to the collapse of these industries?
Sure. I mean, the fact is that most fur farms, if they suffer an action where every animal is released, have a very, very, very difficult time recovering financially from those type of raids. So a well-executed raid is going to shut down most fur farms. And so in that way, it could be achieved, the end of the fur industry could be achieved very, very efficiently through just a handful of people, relatively speaking, going out and targeting them with these tactics.
What's so wrong with doing direct action that stays within the boundaries of the law?
First of all, there's almost no way to directly liberate an animal that is legal. In almost every instance, the law is going to be on the side of the people abusing the animals. Animals are viewed as property and are protected as such. So the laws certainly have not caught up with our ethics, so to speak. But, you know, the term direct action has gotten really watered down over the years. If we're going to take it at its purest form, the way that I always interpreted direct action is that direct action is inherently illegal, but I think it means different things to different people. So we might have to decide what direct action means before I could effectively answer that question. But to me, direct action has always been the set of tactics that we use when the law will not protect animals and we have to intervene on their behalf.
You know, I think the question of property destruction is a very interesting one in the discussion here, because, of course, animals at fur farms are, according to the law and according to the farm owners themselves, they are property, but it's property that's alive. And yet, on the other hand, we have lifeless property, namely concrete and bricks, and we see the destruction of these kinds of lifeless forms of property as more threatening and somehow disadvantageous towards society than the murder of living, breathing property, namely animals. So can you explain to us what exactly this situation means in terms of property, and what does violence mean to you when it comes to the situation of animals when they're viewed as property?
First of all, I think you and I agree we don't look at animals as property. So when I think of property in regards to this subject, I would just think of instruments that are used to abuse animals, to imprison animals, or to in any way facilitate their oppression. So, and that is also a whole toolbox that ALF has at their disposal, is not just liberating animals, but also targeting the property of animal abusers, which is functions as sort of an indirect way of saving animals. For example, you can go into a lab and destroy equipment, you could destroy cages at a fur farm, you could decommission trucks that are used to transport animals and so forth. So the violence argument, I don't really like to even legitimize it by having refuted, because it just seems almost silly and kind of just self-evident that you cannot commit any violence against an inanimate object. The object can't feel. I would not assign the word violence to anything that the ALF does. The ALF has a strict code of nonviolence. It always has. It always will. It's worded into the ALF guidelines. And I think a lot of what the ALF does, unfortunately, the media does spin is violent. But you know, if you actually look at just the hard facts of what the ALF does, it's always property destruction is always going to be an indirect way of saving animals. So if somebody burns a truck, the message might get lost to the public when they hear about this, and especially to the media. But the fact is, I think the equation being done by the ALF in this situation is, one, it's going to cost the abusers a lot of money, and two, you know, if they can't get the animals to the slaughterhouse, maybe that's, that many fewer animals that are going to be killed that day. And I think people have a hard time thinking in terms of the importance of saving one animal. I think people think of it in terms of, did they or did they not, put the slaughterhouse out of business, or did they or did they not put the fur farm out of business? And that's not always the question, although it would be, wonderful if someone could achieve that. I think the better question is, did they in fact save any animals in the process of what they did, or as a result of what they did? And oftentimes it can be difficult to quantify, but I think that's always going to be the goal of any ALF action, is either directly or indirectly to save animals.
So I actually want to talk a bit about, you know, that question of business. Have you seen historically when ALF actions have worked successfully to save animals and then in consequence put businesses out of their practice and out of their actual functioning, have you seen it that, you know, that area that a business might have operated, that a new one popped up? Or has it been the case that when a business goes out of practice, it simply goes out of practice?
Historically, I think, and this is just being honest, and at least in this country, and I have not studied other countries quite as closely as I have in the U.S., but I think other countries have been a lot more successful in terms of their ALF campaigns. I know in the U.S., in point of fact, you could probably point to only a handful of businesses that have been effectively put out of business through ALF tactics. And that's, you know, we could go into a whole conversation about why that is. I think most ALF campaigns aren't actually campaigns. They tend to be more sort of one-shot actions and not part of any sustained effort. So that can contribute to the fact that some of these businesses oftentimes are able to recover. But there have been, you know, just a couple years ago, there was a first store put out of business purely because its windows were broken out on several occasions. There have been slaughterhouses that have been shut down. So it definitely does happen, and it doesn't happen often enough, but at the same time, there can be a lot of victories along the way to shutting down these industries.
We're chatting with author, activist, and advisor for the North American Animal Liberation Front Press Office, Peter Young, where we're going to take a quick break and listen to a song by Drummond Bell Tower called Padded Cell. We're chatting with Peter Young, activist, author, and advisor for the North American Animal Liberation Front, which is an international underground leaders resistance that engages in illegal direct action in pursuit of animal liberation.
So I wonder if you can tell us a bit about the conditions that you spent and how the conditions were in prison and how it was to be vegan in prison.
I went to a federal prison. Federal prisons are generally considered to be less violent, more a little more laid back than most state prisons. So there's a lot of distinction in the culture. So I just want to give that preface before I share my prison experience. My experience in prison was vastly different than what I thought it would be. I think I had been fed, I think a lot of us have been fed this idea of U.S. prisons as sort of being this survival of the fittest, kind of gladiator-style fight to survive on a daily basis. And that's just not really what I encountered. I didn't get in any fights the whole time I was in prison. I when I actually got to prison, I saw a couple of fights in county jail. I didn't even see a fight when I actually got to a real prison. You know, in almost every way, what I thought the prison experience was going to be like is not what it actually was like. Now, there were guys that did have a lot of problems in prison. Usually those are the people that have problems out in the, you know, the free world, so to speak. And I think the same sort of rules apply in both, you know, both sides of the fence, which is that, you know, if you are just an unlikable person outside, you're going to have a lot of problems in prison as well. But if you have the ability to, you know, if you're socially adept and you have the ability to interact with people and make people like you, outside you will in prison as well. So I found that being able to talk to people was my biggest asset. It was not being able to fight well, because I certainly can't do that. So as far as vegan food, that was extremely difficult. There's nothing that requires any jail or prison anywhere to provide a vegan with vegan food. So it was, I mean, I was in, it's hard to talk about the experience in the general sense because I was in so many different places. I was in, I think it was 7 jails and 1 prison during those 2 years that I was incarcerated. So there were times when I had to go on hunger strike on a couple of occasions just to get the jail to pay attention to my needs. There's a couple times, you know, sometimes I'd have to literally sort of do the prison version of dumpster diving just to survive. I'd have to, like, dig through the trash to get people's throwaways. I had to barter with prisoners. I had to pay people in the kitchen to smuggle me food. I had to sort of employ a bunch of different tactics just to stay vegan. Very difficult, extremely difficult. There were a couple times where I had to resort to having people, supporters on the outside, just bombard the jail with phone calls telling them to give me vegan food, which is actually very, very effective.
Could you expand a bit about what prison solidarity looks like and how those of us on the outside can help?
Biggest one, I would say, is you have to divide it up between the pre-trial phase and post-trial. So in pre-trial, the biggest thing you can do for a prisoner is donate to their legal fund. That's really important. It can mean the difference between, you know, getting 10 years and getting 2 years, like in my case. The other thing is to especially, well, this would apply to the friends of the person who is incarcerated. Keep your mouth shut. Things that you say during that very crucial stage when somebody's just been arrested, they're about to go to trial, they're listening to everything everybody's saying. There's a saying amongst law enforcement, I might get a little bit wrong, but it goes something like, stir up the hive and then listen to the buzzing. And what they do is they arrest somebody, and then they know that's going to stimulate a lot of conversation about the sort of merits of the charges against them. Did they do it? Did they not do it? Where were they on the night? They were supposed to be doing this other thing. And they're listening to all this. So people should really be aware of that and keep their mouth shut. When someone actually has to go to prison, letters are huge. Visits are huge. Donating money to the commissary fund so they can eat vegan. That's huge. These and books, I think, would be the top 4 or 5 things.
Many vivisection raid communiques focus solely on the oppression of animals while ignoring other exploitative practices of the research lab. And, of course, what comes to mind is the oppressions that arise from capital, the oppressions that maybe come to the lab workers or the technicians themselves. I guess the question I have is, why does it seem that ALF actions and the communiques that come out of those actions don't focus on these other factors or the underlying forces of capital that turn animals into commodities?
Well, the ALF, first of all, when people come together to carry out an ALF action, it is for a very specific purpose. People will come together, they will carry out an action, and they will, you know, possibly disband and sometimes never see each other again. So, and it's always for a very specific goal. So I would definitely challenge the assertion that other issues are ignored so much as that they're just not overtly addressed. You know, in an action that's just may only take, you know, 30 minutes or an hour, and then you know, the group will disband. As far as, you know, communiques go, I think it's kind of become somewhat unfashionable in certain circles to just say, I'm doing something solely for the benefit of these individual creatures, whether they're humans, non-humans, what have you. And I think, you know, I would say, you know, the ALF in most instances would probably not care too much about whether or not what they did offended somebody's, you know, what they said in their communique or did not say in their communique, whether or not that offended somebody's, you know, anarchist sensibilities. I think they probably don't care about that. And I know the animals certainly don't care. And that's ultimately, you know, why someone would carry out an ALF action. And I think your question kind of gets at something that a belief that I feel is a little bit self-serving of us as a species to say that the suffering that we endure in any way compares to what animals have to go through. For example, you know, a worker in a lab, while they may be oppressed and it may be a really horrible situation for them, the fact is that in no way does that compare to what the animals in that lab have to go through. The workers at least get to go home. The animals do not. I think it's really, really important to keep that in mind.
But I guess the question that I had more so is that, couldn't we be adding on the reasons? So when, let's say, a slaughterhouse is shut down or a lab is shut down or animals are liberated from that lab and that lab goes into economic crisis, it seems to be that, and I don't mean to say that, of course, the oppression of the animals is in any way equal to or less than maybe the oppression of the technicians there, but it seems that isn't there the possibility that the potential of these actions is stunted, where instead of being an act of solidarity where we act for animals and other people such that other activists can also join into this cause, it seems to be that we focus just on animals and we lose the potentiality of reaching out to other groups.
I don't think that the average worker in a research lab I don't think they're probably reading ALF communiques, and I probably don't think that's not really the audience for an ALF communique. The audience primarily is going to be other activists and maybe possibly the media. You know, you only have a few senses to get your message out in an ALF communique, and I don't think in any way that the merits of an ALF action is in any way undermined by not sort of going down an entire checklist of all of the ways that the oppression of animals is interlinked with other forms of oppression. I just don't think that's the place for an ALF communique. And I think this kind of gets at something I really like to address, which is that I think it's really important that we start to kind of delegitimize critique without action to follow it up. Because I do see a lot of critiques of ALF actions or the ALF in general or the animal rights movement in general. And I really don't like people who sit back and rip apart what other people are doing, especially people who are out risking their freedom. And I think there's quite a lot of that that goes on, particularly in regards to the ALF. And I think that if anyone has an issue with what the ALF is doing or what they are or not including in their communiques, they should be out carrying out ALF actions. That's it. If you want something included in an ALF communique, those people should be out carrying out actions and they can write their own communiques. But instead, unfortunately, from the safety of the internet or, you know, anarchist bookstore, what have you, people like to take their shots, but they're not out putting themselves on the line the way the ALF is.
What trends do you actually see the current ALF movement or the animal liberation movement in itself doing? What kind of things do you see going on and what kind of shifts have happened?
There's a couple things right now I think you're going to see. One is that there have been so many informants and snitches in the ALF. I really think you're going to see an increase in people who carry out actions by themselves, where they're not working with anybody else, so they don't have the burden of having to wonder, is this person one day going to sell me out? So I think that's one big one. The other one that comes to mind is the fact, and I referenced it earlier, there is a huge burden that comes with having to rescue an animal and then find it a home. So I think the ALF is also going to be start looking at other places, other types of animal abuse industries where they can release animals directly into the wild. So that might be something like, obviously, it's been done at fur farms for years. I think that might be extended to, you've seen in recent years, a number of deer farms that have been liberated where animals are raised for, I guess, what they call venison, for deer meat. Hunting preserves have been another recent target. That's another trend you see. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that, too.
Great. So you've actually been traveling around the world, I guess, within the last year or so, speaking about animal rights. Can you tell us a bit about what you've been speaking about, what kind of topics your lectures have been covering?
Honestly, a lot of what you and I have just talked about in the last half an hour or so, quite a lot about a little bit about the prison experience. I try to demystify what prison is. I think that's really important for any movement. I try to make my talk something that even if you're totally outside the animal rights movement, you can still get something out of it. But at the same time, I want those people to also hear the message about what happens to animals. And I've gotten a lot of people, even though my messages or my talks are not overtly about veganism, I've got tons of feedback from people that say they saw my talk and became vegan. So I talk about what happens to animals. I do talk about the ALF. I talk about some of my personal experiences. I talk about people who are currently facing prison time. I talk a lot about, try to demystify ALF tactics, because I think there's a lot of people have this sense that the ALF is sort of a, you know, it takes this sort of a elite ability or this specialized knowledge to carry out an ALF action. I try to let people know, this is stuff that people just figure out because they feel driven and because it's necessary, because it's just, and because it's something that I think anyone that's aware of what's happening to animals is morally compelled to do. So I try to demystify just about every facet of the conversation.
Is there anything that you've been surprised by or shocked at? I know you've been traveling around Europe and other parts of the world that, of course, have different contexts when it comes to animal liberation.
Yeah, one of the things that surprised me the most, and it probably shouldn't, but I've had to change a lot of my talks because of it. It's just the level of fear that exists right now where, I have people who will come up to me and say, they'll talk about how there's a dog that's being starved to death, a couple doors down from them, and they really want to go rescue this dog, but they're afraid of getting charged as terrorists. The level of fear that holds people back from doing things that, in their hearts, they know they're compelled to do. And that's one thing that I've really, I've had to switch up a lot of my talking points because I realized I didn't want to do anything that in any way contributed to this fear. I did not in any way want to, there's a lot of fun that comes from talking about, telling stories about, the FBI breaking down your door and searching your house and things like that. But I started to take a lot of that stuff out of my talks. Even though it was interesting, I felt like I was coming into these towns and leaving a lot of fear. I feel like people would hear these things and they would say, oh my gosh, I might want to help animals, but I did not sign up for having the FBI raid my door or getting labeled as a terrorist. This is not something I want. I didn't want to be a part of that anymore. So that was one thing that really surprised me, is just how pervasive this fear is, that this post-9/11 climate that we live in now. I think that's probably the most surprising thing.
So a bit earlier you said regarding the meat industry that, of course, ALF actions tend to be less effective when it comes to these larger industries because they can merely subsume the costs that any of these kind of actions take onto them. Do you have any recommendations about kind of campaigns or tactics that you find more effective when it comes to these larger industries?
Sure. Like I said before, I think there's a strong argument you can make that vegan outreach is probably the biggest threat that we could invite on the meat industry right now. So I really like what, I tend to sort of support both extremes. Vegan outreach, going out and leafleting, I think is awesome. I really, really support that. I think it's really effective. I think when you have a lot of people out doing it in large numbers, you really create substantial changes, and it does translate to saved animals. So I think that's a fantastic approach. I think the undercover investigations the groups like Mercy for Animals are doing right now are awesome. We are advancing as a movement by leaps and bounds just because a few people have had the courage to go inside these places and get footage, and then some people who are very media savvy have been able to get that footage in front of millions of people. So I would say those are the two biggest most effective tactics that we're employing right now as a movement.
Is there anything else you'd like to comment on the animal rights movement, the direction you see it going?
I think on every level, the movement's getting more strategic. I think the more mainstream above-ground groups like Mercy for Animals are getting much more efficient and getting a lot more bang for their buck out of their campaigns with the undercover stuff. I think the ALF is also learning from its mistakes and realizing that, maybe going out and breaking windows at a McDonald's isn't quite getting the job done. So even though you see fewer actions per year right now, those actions, when they do happen, are much more effective. You just had a few weeks ago, you had a fox farm that was hit in Virginia, and every animal was released from that fox farm. These are the kind of actions that I think are really effective and should replace the smaller scale, kind of more sabotage-oriented stuff. So, those are two. I think the trend overall is positive. Unfortunately, with emerging countries like China and India shifting over to a meat-based diet, we still lose in battle. But I think as far, at least with the United States and the movement here, I think we're doing a lot better.
We've been chatting with Peter Young. Peter Young is an animal liberation activist, the FBI formerly called, an active member of the Animal Liberation Front. Emerging from 7 years of being wanted by the FBI in a federal prison sentence, today Peter is an activist, lecturer, and unapologetic supporter of those who work outside the law to achieve human, earth, and animal liberation. If you want to hear anything more that Peter has to say and you're excited about from his interview, check out his website at animalliberationfrontline.com. He posts about the Animal Liberation Front, and also he breaks Animal Liberation Front-related news stories. And we just want to add in that, of course, we here at Animal Voices don't support and don't advocate for anyone to break the law, but if you happen to break the law, we really hope you don't get caught.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Next week on the show, it's World Farm Animals Day, and so we'll be presenting an interview with Michael Weber of the Farm Animal Rights Movement on the 10 Billion Lives Tour, plus a feature interview with Woodstock Sanctuary founder Jenny Brown on her story of dedicating her life to rescuing farmed animals and educating the public about their plight. Just wanted to remind people about our upcoming Thanksgiving event, our Compassionate Thanksgiving and potluck and variety show that's happening on October the 8th, and I invite you to check out our website for all the details, animalvoices.org/events. We here at the Animal Voices Show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out our website, animalvoices.org, where our shows can also be downloaded from. And if you appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please do show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. To make a donation of $5, $10, $20, or whatever you can afford, simply go to cooperadio.org and click on Donate Now. And remember to indicate on your donation that it's going towards Animal Voices. And if you're in Canada and you make a donation of at least $25, your donations are tax deductible. Every little bit helps, so we thank you for your assistance. We are leaving you now with the song called The Men Upstairs by the Canadian band Drum Bell Tower. Stay tuned now for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
The men upstairs got me in a bind. The men upstairs, we freak and foil just to get a slice. We freak and foil. Alive, away they go. I push the